Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening. I'm a little concerned that perhaps I tempted fate last week when I spoke about the news flooding us with images and stories that were overwhelming in their sadness and sorrow and brokenness, and we felt pressed by pain on all sides, and it felt overwhelming. This week's news has been a prime example of that. It began, at least my awareness of it began, with the tragic loss of an actor who was a childhood hero and inspiration of mine. One of Robin Williams' roles inspired me to pursue teaching, which eventually led to me understanding a call to preaching, but that's a story for another day. But even the heartbreaking loss of this great actor and comedian gave way in the face of the horror and sadness of the events unfolding in Ferguson, Missouri this week. Another black teen, another tragic death, a police officer shooting 18-year-old Michael Brown multiple times, even as eyewitnesses report he was unarmed and had his hands in the air. All of this actually happened last Saturday night, but the story unfolded over the week as grieving and angry community members drew together in protest and in vigil, sometimes peaceful, sometimes less constrained, and began clashing with police, eventually in riot gear, evoking those images of the civil rights protests of the 60s as tear gas and rubber bullets were turned on the crowds and nightsticks and police dogs kept at the ready. Now, I'd watched a protest a little more than a week earlier. Hundreds of people demonstrating outside the White House in Washington, D.C., calling for justice for the children and families separated and detained in the American Southwest, crying out for immigration reform and justice and compassion for children. Over 200 faith leaders were arrested that day, including many United Methodist leaders, carefully and dutifully marched into buses. I watched two bishops be loaded into buses, two United Methodist bishops, anyway, and countless people wearing stoles of all different colors and representing all different faith traditions. More importantly to me, the arrests included two of my very close friends, Chet and Steve, both of whom work for the Methodist Federation for Social Action in Washington, D.C. Chet is its executive director, and Steve is a coalition leader for MFSA and some other organizations working for justice in the church. And so I watched the live stream, biting my nails, waiting to see them and to know that they were okay. And I breathed a sigh of relief even as I saw them in wrist cuffs. I breathed a sigh of relief as I saw them loaded into the bus, one right after the other, and I knew that they were together. Each of them later reported that they were treated respectfully, that the demonstration went smoothly, they were processed and released and unharmed. How different a series of arrests in Ferguson this week. How different a scene, how different a confrontation. Maybe crowds are a little bit more charged when we're not talking about children 2,500 miles away in danger and dying, but ones in your community. How different when the cries for justice are for your own child. When the grace needed is needed here and now, there is no time to be orderly, no time to be calm, no time to be contained. Maybe that's why the woman in today's gospel speaks out the way she does, cries out, shouts after Jesus. How inappropriate. As a woman, as a person from a different ethnic group than Jesus and his followers, speaking up is not acceptable for her to do. Certainly shouting and crying out after people is not an acceptable or polite course of action. But this is her child who is suffering and sick and dying, and there is no time to lose. Jesus first ignores and then pushes back against her request. All my life reading the Bible, and this passage never ceases to challenge me. Jesus ignores and then pushes back on her request for healing for her daughter. I don't know why. Maybe he's trying to illustrate a point or use some sort of reverse psychology to teach his disciples about inclusion. That's certainly been suggested. Maybe in that moment he really thought that his mission was limited to the children of Israel. Although I'd kind of hate to think that. Maybe he was tired and overtaxed. He'd been healing people for days and days and days on end and felt like he had no strength left. Maybe, like I've done so many times to my great shame and sorrow, like I'm sure many other folks, white folks particularly, perhaps, have done in racially charged moments as this encounter with this foreign woman seems to be, he slipped and said something he regretted. I've certainly done that. I don't know why he said it, but I am baffled and grateful that this story appears in the gospel. Actually, in more than one gospel, this story appears. Slightly different details, but this same story appears. Because this story speaks to us and has so much to teach us now, and yet it is a challenging one, and one that it might have been far easier to exclude, to not look at the uncomfortable nature of this story and how this woman has to press, has to advocate for herself, for her child, in the face of sickness and evil. She has to cry out for it. It reminds us how the marriage of justice and grace cannot be undone, even grace in our less lovely moments. It reminds us that sometimes it is the most human person in the room, the desperate mother on her knees, begging for the life of her child, who reminds us in the face of all politics and theology and theory of the real face of injustice and suffering. It reminds us that justice that is limited to some, grace that is limited to some, is not sufficient. She draws us back. This Canaanite woman, this outsider, this desperate and broken person, draws us all back. Jesus, his disciples, the readers, thousands of years later. Yes, but my child is a child too. Even if others see us as less, can we not share even a scrap of grace, even a crumb of justice? Like those stabbed to the gut signs in the hands of protesters this week, I am a man. I am a woman. Black lives matter. Because these things needed to be said. Grace is not grace if it is kept for a few children and not for others. If it is poured out for the children of Israel or of America or of the upper middle class, but not upon others. Justice is not justice if it is reserved, or if justice or grace are reserved for some. And both justice and grace are the same in that they are not diminished one iota by being shared. We might, in our fear and weakness or tiredness or our own humanity, think that there's not enough grace to go around, that we have to protect grace so that we have enough, think that there's not enough justice for all people to share, but that we need to protect the justice that keeps us safe. But this remarkable woman reminds us, all of us, that even the scraps of justice can fill the bellies of those who hunger for it. Even the crumbled, broken grace of that last bit of compassion can soothe and heal deep and real pain. This week, reading about, seeing images of the injustice and violence, the cries of grief and rage and loss, the brokenhearted lament that the lives of your people, your children, you, matter less, if at all, I found myself asking, where are the scraps? Where are the scraps of justice and of grace? Where are they for Michael Brown and his parents and his community? Where are they for the protesters in Ferguson, and yes, the police officers facing them across a few inches of space, the air so thick with tension it can and does snap at any moment? Where are the crumbs that fall from the table of America, from the table of love, from the table of the holy, to fill and feed and heal those who hunger for justice and compassion? I'm drawn again and again to this woman, this remarkable Canaanite woman, this unremarkable mother doing exactly what most parents do or try to do when their kids need them. She reminds us that we have to push back. We have to insist upon justice and grace. We have to break open the mindset that there's not enough of either. Or that if we and our children have justice and grace, that no one else's children need it. Or that no one who's no longer a literal child needs it. She's the one who does that in this story. She's the one who expands grace and justice. It is her who draws the circle wider. Her who insists on naming exclusion and injustice when it strikes her. Claiming the measure, even the small measure of grace. The most human, broken, marginalized person in the room. Her. Her. Michael Brown's parents. The protesters on the street. Her. Her. Us. I read a great article online about what white people can do in the face of Ferguson. Mostly it includes listening, learning, hearing, remembering. That injustice is not isolated, that violence toward and against people of color, and specifically against young African American men, is a plague of discrimination and shame in this country and beyond. And it involves the humility to stop asking questions about robbery and looting, and hear instead the parents crying for their children, the community crying for its lost and unrecognized humanity. To join in solidarity and vigil and prayer and letter writing and social networking and whatever else to press for grace and for justice. And this morning's gospel passage reminds us that we can and must always push back peacefully, insistently, undeniably, sometimes shouting as the woman does. That is our role. Be we protesters or police, be we disciples or desperate parents, we fallible human beings who can and must cry for justice, who can and must remind one another that God's grace doesn't run out if it is shared, that the crumbs of grace are still more than enough, that justice does not suffer for being widened, and that all who search for scraps of justice need to be fed. Daughter, great is your faith, says Jesus. Your child is healed. May our faith in the grace and justice and their ever-present abundance, may our faith be great. And may healing one day, someday, come. Amen.